Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hi there, podcast fans. I'm Tom Gibbs. Welcome to Telegraph Audio Football Club. Today, the brutal Liverpool footballing machine remain relentless against an injury-ravaged Spurs. We ask whether January signings can save the North London Lilywhites from the disgrace of finishing outside the top four. It's Doomwatch at the other end of the table. The fates of Burnley, Bournemouth, Norwich and Aston Villa are all assessed with a rigour seemingly lacking from their respective coaching setups. Plus, the return of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, a natural successor to Sergio Ramos, and overcoming the odds to make it to a game. Let's take you now into the audio recording facility where I'm joined by Mina Arzooks Rizuki. Arzooks is what Joel Grove called you, Mina, when we were discussing whether or not you'd be on the podcast this week. How do you feel about this nickname?
There's a guy when I do a show on one of the TV channels and he always calls me Arzooki, and it's been like 6 years and I don't want to be like, it's been wrong for so long.
Have I been saying Rizuki correctly?
You have.
Good.
But I don't know how to correct him now. So every time I walk in, even if it's like a pub on a Christmas party, he's like, Arzooki! And I'm like, that's just not my name. Like, okay.
I'm very, very relieved I've been getting it right. Alongside her, it's JJ Contains Taureen Bull. How are you?
I see. Yes, I'm good. How are you, Tom?
Pretty good, thank you. Feeling quite sprightly. A little bit sadder than I was this time last week because my Minnesota Vikings are out of the playoffs. But
yeah.
What a ride.
Your strong Minnesota ties.
Yeah. They go deep. I've been three times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't Tom Brady out?
It's great.
Tom Brady's out in more ways than one.
Oh.
He's gone. It's over.
It's over.
The dynasty is over. Completing the AFC Telegraph lineup, it's Alistair Victory Lap Tweedale, making his final appearance on the podcast, sadly.
Yeah, very, very sad. Oh, news to Mina. Yeah, well, I'll tell you about that later. But
Don't say where you're going. We'll just bleep it if you try and say where you're going.
Yeah. Well, this is a UK exclusive right here. I'm all right, thanks. Yeah,
good.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to
Why
have
Why are we
you.
Having him on if this is over?
Yeah, ask Joel Grove. One of the number of questions you can ask Joel Grove, including the new nickname.
Good that we've left this till we were recording.
Let's start on the actual football with Spurs and Liverpool, who played an exciting game on Saturday. You were there, JJ. Liverpool, again, a little bit fortunate with how this went to secure their 1-0 win, but they won again. This is how you win league titles, isn't it? Just grinding it out. Even though they were brilliant in the first half, they were fortunate that Spurs didn't score at least once against them.
Oh, definitely. And you can see the two differences in how the managers approach their different teams. Like, Liverpool have everything accounted for. So whatever, like a free-flowing chess game, if Mourinho makes one move, Liverpool instantly, like naturally, automatically counter it by doing something else. So at the start, they were pushing high with four. Spurs were pushing high with four, and Liverpool had their four centre-backs, four defenders, but they wanted to get their full-backs high. So straight away, Jordan Henderson dropped into a three, to the point you think they're actually playing a three at the back to start off with, but they're not. And Wijnaldum would do that on the left, so Robertson can go forward. And that was one solution. And then they had later on, they had Aurier was told to mark Robertson to stop him getting these 2v1s against the fullback Tanganga. That's his name, isn't it? Mm. He did really well. But to stop that overload on that side. And then Robertson, rather than going outside, would start going inside. And Aurier couldn't go inside because that's not where he's meant to go. So then he was just stood in his own and Mane pulled out wide. Just really, really clever the way they had it. And I thought Liverpool just looked so so well coached and drilled. They don't have to talk to anything. They're all encouraging each other. Whereas Spurs seemed a little bit like they're kind of reading the script still, and they were kind of looking at each other. And like Alderweireld fell out with Ori a couple of times, and you had Mourinho on the touchline constantly trying to dictate stuff. So you can see there's real work in progress.
Watching this game, the first half especially, Mina, I felt that defending against Liverpool must be actively traumatic. They're such a nuisance to play against. I'm surprised that defenders aren't going off crying, basically. How on earth do you cope with them?
What's interesting about this is that I felt that it looked so traumatic because this is what's so interesting, because ages ago I tried to figure out what's the difference between a big team and one that just wins all the time. And Atletico Madrid win all the time, but they don't have an intimidating aura. Liverpool have reached that ability now. They look scary. And so when you're on the pitch, you're not actually playing Liverpool. You're already starting 1-0 down because you're playing their reputation. And so I felt like Spurs were deathly terrified in the first half. And they had organized themselves so defensively because it was all about try to contain those fullbacks, try to contain them. And obviously it's Mourinho, so he just loves playing that kind of defensive game. And then that's why it looks so scary. But once you just sort of try to shake that off and actually try to indulge in your own attacking game, then I think that's when you start being a lot better. And it was strange because with Mourinho, I was like, you're playing a game that's perfect for Kane or a forward, but there is no Kane. So it was only really very good from them in the very end when they brought on the likes of Lamella and Lo Celso was amazing as well.
Lamella changed the game specifically because he came on that right side and then they put Tanganga to left back and Ori moved back to right. And suddenly Robertson couldn't get forward quite as much.
Yeah.
And that limited them so much.
And he pressed really heavily from the front. I thought that he was...
Won the ball a few times. Liverpool got tired as well. And then they were getting those chances in the counter. Like classic Mourinho. And like I was saying before, if Son had taken that chance that he missed, skied over the bar. And
there were several.
The Celso, they could quite easily have come away. And if they had, everyone would be going, oh, Mourinho, what a tactical masterclass that was. I think
Absolutely.
He got everything right. It just didn't pay off.
But he only got it right in the latter half.
No, but I agree with JJ. I think he got it completely right, and he did say afterwards that
even Ron Strange.
He did say afterwards that if they'd played the way they did for the last 20 minutes for longer,
exhausted.
They would have just been exhausted, and that's completely true. And he had to just contain it. He had to accept that Tottenham are completely inferior to Liverpool, which they are at the moment. And that last 20 minutes, they could have got a result. I thought they actually did quite well. I don't know if I completely agree that Liverpool were fortunate completely, because I thought they were completely superior
for that first 70 minutes.
And Tottenham arguably were quite lucky to only be 1-0 down by that point. But having got to that point and then with 20 minutes to go, turning to Lamella and Lo Celso, it actually worked quite well for Spurs.
I genuinely wondered whether that was part of the game plan, that Mourinho was trying to push those four against the back four so they would get tired from having to chase, because like from goal kicks, they would pay the goal kick short to Alderweireld inside the box.
If this was a game plan, then I'm amazed, because it did not look like a game plan.
you got to tire them out,
panic.
Right?
Yeah.
And they looked tired towards the end, and Klopp says they were tired. And I think Andy Robertson afterwards even said that they felt it a bit. Like it's, and if you can do this and then tire them out a bit, you'll get chances at the end. That's when you make mistakes, right? Because even though your legs are, you can still run and pass the ball, but you start making little errors, like Joe Gomez playing stupid passes across the middle of the park, stuff like that.
So you think that was the game plan, is just to like, let's exhaust them, let's play this game, sort of like you're saying, defensively. A little bit, and then we'll just go for it at the end.
I think it might have been. I just don't know how fit he expects the players to be, because they looked tight. I mean, Moura was running constantly, someone's running constantly, Ali's had to do it as well. But it does then tire out those defenders who often aren't put 1v1 with players, and it meant they had like a block of six behind them to protect the rest of the pitch. It sort of worked, sort of didn't, but I wondered whether that was part of the thinking that we'll put subs on about 70 minutes and really have a bit of a push at that point.
I think it definitely was. I'm confused as to whether the kind of the way what you were just starting to explain before I rudely interrupted you, sorry, was that Tottenham would take goal kicks short, get it passed straight back to Gazzaniga, and then he would lump it up the pitch towards tiny Lucas Moura under loads of pressure, and Tottenham would just lose it again and again and again. But then later it started to work weirdly.
But the thing with that, so the plan
because
of that,
they kept
think.
Trying to overcome the midfield, which was really bothering
no,
me.
No, I understand
it was so
why. I understand why he would do it, but why create a situation where your goalkeeper is under pressure?
Well, I think the reason for that quickly is that the goal kick went short to Alderweireld to go back to Gazzaniga, because obviously from a goal kick you can't be offside, so Liverpool's defence drops a bit deeper. But once the ball goes back, they push up, and that means you can hit it. And then you had an example where Gomez and Van Dijk went for the same same ball.
It's genius.
It dropped, went to Son, and then he was able to burst away with it.
Oh. Very much like the Dickensian nickname for Lucas Moura, Tiny Lucas. That speaks to what I'd like to ask next, which is how ruined are Spurs without Harry Kane at the moment, Ali? And is there an argument for just splurging a little bit in January? We know January is a tough time to buy, but do they just bite the bullet and spend some money on a striker, any striker?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I think Tottenham are kind of caught in between a rock and a hard place because they need a striker that can hold the ball up. With the way they were playing against Liverpool, they needed someone to be able to relieve some pressure on the defence because Liverpool just kept coming when Son and Lucas kept losing it. But they don't want to just buy like a target man. And for those final 20 minutes, they were looking good playing the ball around on the floor rather than if they'd had a Fernando Llorente, for example, they would have just
What's been he up to?
Lumping it out the pitch. Well, like he was great. He's at Napoli, isn't he?
But he is thought of as being potentially a player that's going to come back.
He was great in a sense, but I do think that spending big in January, players cost more money and doing
but
that
out of
right
curiosity,
now.
Wouldn't you want to just bring him in for, like you're saying, the first 70 minutes, lump it forward, then he can control?
Well, would we have preferred, would Tottenham fans have preferred to have played those last 20 minutes, lumping it up to Llorente or doing what we did?
I'm saying, do it for the first 70 minutes and then in the final 20 minutes take off your lump and then whichever lump.
No, lump's good. Yeah. Lump
and then play that beautiful way.
Yeah,
you're saying that beautiful way that works, that it's too exhaustive to play for the whole time. So have your lump for the first while.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I just wonder whether buying that player in January on more than a 6-month loan, getting someone for a 6-month contract is pretty difficult, and spending that much money is worth it. I don't know.
I do think we've solved it here. Lumpy Llorente next to Tiny Lucas. Classic big man, little man. It's either the new Spurs strike partnership or a brilliant sitcom. Let's move on to Doomwatch, topic two. We're going to have a run through the teams who are in trouble. There's quite a few teams who could be a little bit concerned at the moment in the Premier League. Real disaster, Mina, for Bournemouth on Sunday. Billed as a must-win game at home to Watford, and they've lost it 3-0. What's going so wrong for them at the moment?
I think this is something that they're not really used to having to deal with. This is a side that's obviously always been capable of scoring goals. It's a side that has a coach who many people think is better suited to a bigger club with better players. I don't think they're a team that is really ready to do the whole bump and grind and try to win every duel, which is actually something that I...
What the bump and grind? That's surely not.
No.
Surely not the bump and grind.
I don't think I've heard that term used in football speak. I like it.
Okay, well, I meant the grind. I don't know why bump and grind.
Leave the bump
came
out of
it.
The bump and the lump.
This is getting really bad. The grind and the grafting and the trying to be warriors at the end and trying to win the duels. I think this is a tough time for them in that. I actually also think the same of Norwich. I don't think they're a team that are set out capable of doing that because they're a team that are supposed to play expansive football. What worries me about this, and I know that Eddie Howe is a great manager, but I also think that there comes a time sometimes when your team is really falling apart, which they are. And I do feel sorry for them because they've had so many injuries and trying to get this all back on when the confidence is low, even when you're getting players back, it's very difficult. But sometimes it is about, let's just get back to basics. Let's just do the simple things. Maybe not play out from the back because it just looks like all of you are so short of confidence. Let's try to figure out a way of just doing a little bit of what Nigel Pearson is doing at Watford, just back to basics, high intensity, and let's try to see what can happen there.
Yeah, a few big games coming up for Bournemouth against their rivals. And if you look at their fixtures, the end of the season is really intimidating for them. So we'll see how that goes. I reckon, Ali, them or Burnley, who are also in trouble, might be about to do the unthinkable. And you would have thought, I think Howe and Dyche have earned the right to, if they get the teams relegated, I wouldn't have a problem with that if I was in charge of those clubs because it's their promotion in both cases. But I reckon one of these teams might be about to pull the trigger. And what would that mean for Burnley or Bournemouth if they did that? I remember when Spurs appointed Mourinho, someone said, well, we're just like all the other clubs now, which was a little bit pompous, but it would be a serious change of tack if either of these teams did do that. Do you think it's likely, and what would it mean for Burnley or Bournemouth if they got rid of their manager?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I completely agree. I think they've earned the right to just be able to see out the season. Maybe that's a bit sort of patronising for two teams that maybe want to dream of bigger things. They're two small clubs, but they've established themselves in the Premier League. Maybe they should start thinking about bigger things. I don't know what it would mean, really. It would be quite a statement, wouldn't it, from both of them. I do wonder with both of the managers, both of them, whether it's just gone a little bit stale. They've both been there a long time. They don't really change their tactics that much. Eddie Howe is just obsessed with playing 4-4-2. I mean, he's not like a Harry Redknapp, we play 4-4-2 kind of manager, but but he just will not change that. He just almost never changes that. And I don't know if maybe it's time for him to realise that something needs to change, and maybe the same for Deitch, I don't know.
Another team in big trouble are Aston Villa, JJ. They were really wretched at home to Manchester City. Danny Drinkwater looking every inch the footballer who has barely played any football this season. And Pepe Reina in the stands, who you might think on this evidence would reconsider his move to Villa. They look really, really poor.
Yeah, you'd think you'd be a little bit worried about what you saw. City were really on it, to be fair, and there's not much you can really do. And the mistakes that Drinkwater made are just those of a player kind of rusty. He won't do them again, but he'd need to have made them first.
Keeper was poor for a few of those goals as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's their backup keeper, isn't he?
Yeah,
his debut.
Don't think Aston
Villa. Get him out, rubbish.
I don't think Aston Villa are that good. I've been saying that, I think, all season. I'm pretty sure if we go through the podcast.
Pre-season, you said that as well.
You say it now, Matt isn't here. Yeah. What about Norwich as well, Mina? The air seems to have gone out of their balloon, whatever was left in it at this point. Big defeat away at Man United. No big surprise there, but a sense of increasing pessimism about where their season's going.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that doesn't really know how to defend. Villa are as well as that side that just seems to be so reactive, and there's no proactive defending going on. Also with Norwich, it's because they've played this specific style of way, and it's really difficult for them to try to change that, especially because their squad seems to be one that has more raw talent than sort of, and that is trying to find its way more than talent that can produce on a consistent basis. So I'm not sure they've got the balance there completely right, but I would say them alongside Villa. I don't know, maybe Burnley or Bournemouth.
Norwich are definitely
what I've written down.
Going down, aren't
yeah,
they? Surely.
Norwich like, have to go down.
Norwich are doing exactly what Huddersfield did before they tried to change everything too late, just sticking to that same style of football and championship. Like, oh, it's so admirable and brave of you. Well done, as you sink to the bottom of the ocean on your holy ship.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone was like, oh, look at them, how beautiful they are going forward. It was like, yeah, but they can't defend, you know?
You can't play like that unless you've got the players who are good enough. I mean, I think Buendia's really special. Kenny McLean's a decent player. Cantwell
really
will
special.
Be good. Max Aarons will be really good. Sam Byron will be really good.
But all of them will be.
There. They're not there yet. Yeah.
Team,
it's kind of hard.
Timo Pukki wins the Danny Cadamateri Award for having a very, very exciting first month of a season and then not being very good after that.
Along with Pavel Pogrebniak.
Oh, I love Pogrebniak. Let's hark all the way back to Saturday lunchtime now and a 1-1 draw between Crystal Palace and Arsenal at Selhurst Park. Aubameyang scored and sent off in the same game. That's the first time it's happened for Arsenal since Mikel Arteta himself did it at Palace in 2013. It felt like the United win, JJ, would be the start of something, a bit of momentum for Arteta. Did this feel a little bit like they were back to square one?
Well, I didn't think they'd turned a corner like everyone says once they beat Man United. It's just, you can see there's different bits in their play and they are doing different things under Arteta. The structure of the team, the shape, the players he's brought in, Ozil's back. But it's still the same players that have been inconsistent all season and for a couple of seasons now. And it's going to take time, coaching, probably another players to be brought in. It's the whole culture of the club is kind of, I don't know how you describe it. It's just that's sort of good enough. They don't put the extra bit of. No one seems hugely wholly determined to make sure they win at all costs. It seems more like they'd rather avoid losing, if that makes sense. And there's a difference to some players. Some of them are just like, I have to win this.
Yeah, I know. I feel like what you. I guess what that you can see in terms of turning a corner is that you can actually see a plan now, which we may have not seen before.
For sure, yeah.
And so that's what it is. It's just that organization that kind of fills you with a bit of hope. The results are not coming, but the performances are a little bit better. And I do think it's a case of having several windows to change this team around and not just bring in the right players, but bring in players, exactly like JJ said, that actually care about winning and having like a nice mix of experience, talent that's coming up, you know, players that can be organized and it's going to take a while to do that. Warriors, players who are perhaps more elegant in their touch. It is about a few years, but you can actually have hope with Arteta because what he's producing at least is a clear sense of an identity and organization. He just doesn't really have all the players he wants.
I also think there's a clear kind of intensity to how they're playing, and especially how they're starting games at the moment. And they don't really seem like they're currently possibly fit enough or can concentrate for long enough to sustain it over an entire 90 minutes.
I think it's concentration.
I also have some stats to back this up. So the first half of Arteta's four Premier League games, they've won three and lost one. The second half of his four Premier League games, they've won one, drawn one and lost two of those 45-minute periods. So they are clearly tailing off in the second half of games, like we saw against Chelsea when in the last 8 minutes they fell to pieces.
What about Palace, Mina? Quite good performance from them to get back into the game. And they've signed Cenk Tosun from Everton, former brief friend of the podcast before we all turned against him when it looked like he might be a bit rubbish. is he going to revive his career at Palace? He did say when he joined Everton he was happy that he hadn't joined Palace. So he's got some fans to win over there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, that this is going to come back and haunt him desperately. But this is a side like 19 goals in 21 games. And I do think that maybe perhaps with a front line that does have Wilfried Zaha producing magic for you all the time, this will at least help take the pressure off him, off Jordan Ayew, and perhaps allow them to be really strong in certain matches. But I don't know whether he's going to work out or not. Obviously, we've seen that he's not this great player, but
They seem to have replaced Christian Benteke, a striker who doesn't score, with Cenk Tosun, who's a striker who doesn't score. And I just don't know what.
It's a weird thing, right? Maybe
that's the identity of the club. You know, we're always full of praise for managers with an identity and a philosophy.
And next year it'll be Joe Linton.
Yeah, and then Danny Kadamateri. We should also discuss one other thing that happened at that Palace game. There were leaflets being distributed outside. There were banners in the stands protesting VAR. Please start the clock, Joel Grove. As you know, we will only discuss VAR for 1 minute. I've already wasted some of that minute by stating the conceit. Do you think, Ali, that fans protesting in this way is going to make any sort of difference to how the league handles VAR in future? There's also players now, more and more players saying we don't want this.
Yeah, I do. I do think that the protests will alert the authorities a little bit. I do also think that it was quite a good weekend for VAR, and the problem that Declan Rice had wasn't with VAR, it was with the handball rule, which is obviously rubbish. But I do, yeah, the VAR isn't a complete product. It's not perfect. It needs a bit of change. But so, yeah.
But to be honest, I don't get it as well. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, you know, walk over to the sideline if you're the referee and referee the game, you make a decision. Then the guy goes and does it and everyone's like, oh my God, this has taken so long. This is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm like, Jesus, no one's ever happy.
Where are you at with it, JJ?
I still think it's some of the laws are being applied in the wrong sort of way.
Oh, I'm afraid that's it.
Well. Also, that handball that Rice was moaning about, I mean, they only scored because the ball was headed off his hand. I know it's point blank, but come on.
What, you're saying it was a handball?
You know when the ball's come off your hand.
Oh, yeah. What, so he should have known that it was coming?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. If you're playing like five, you know when the ball's come off your hand, right? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, just, like, of course.
You know you got away with it.
I've got this idea that if you're through on goal and you know it's touched your hand, you should try and win a corner, because unless you recycle possession, go all the way back to your goalie, you know that it's going to get ruled out if you try and score. So if you win a corner and then score from that,
just start a new phase.
It can count.
Love that. That's
well done. Like, clever.
If you get a job as a set piece,
sign him up.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where he's going.
Hello, I'm Marianne Jones, and I'm the editor of The Telegraph magazine, which means I spend my week overseeing every page, from the front cover to hard-hitting news reports, columns and lifestyle features. We go to print weekly, so we have a little bit longer to craft our journalism using our award-winning writers and fantastic art and photography teams. That means we can publish long-form pieces that really get to the heart of the story. Just recently, our cover interviews with Joaquin Phoenix and James Middleton made global headlines, while our writer Mick Brown's investigation into false memory syndrome won a major press award. And the fact of the matter is, we couldn't have done all of this without our subscribers. Without them, we just can't commission the stories you like reading or make podcasts like this one. Why not try out a 30-day subscription to The Telegraph completely free? Go to thetelegraph.co.uk/audio.
Let's rattle through the rest of the Premier League now, and we'll talk about some of the teams who were winners this weekend over the teams we mentioned in the Doomwatch section. First of all, Watford, JJ, they've overtaken Bournemouth in the table. Did you ever doubt Nigel Pearson? This is a remarkable series of results for him.
I'm really glad he's doing so well with them. Like, he was the one that put the foundations in place for Leicester, obviously. That was the most famous thing he's kind of done. He's quite...
apart from that ostrich quote.
Or well, choking James McCarthy.
Yeah. Well, he's done some other things. But like, he's an interesting character. I quite like having those in the game. He knows how to set a team up. And what Watford players have said is that he's come and given them a rocket and also organised them. And it's worked. Watford have a team that should be in mid-table, and he's getting them where they should be. I think they were always going to get out of that hole, probably not with the other managers. So am I contradicting myself? Maybe. But I like what Nigel Pearson is doing. Like we were saying before, Bournemouth are kind of pretty rubbish at the moment, but Watford should be all right. And you've seen the teams now get to the places on the table where they'll probably end up.
What about Chelsea, Mina? They cruised to a straightforward home win for the first time in a while against Burnley, a 3-0 victory for Chelsea. How did they do it?
I think that on a tactical level, I'll refer to JJ on that. But I do think that their right-hand side is rather thrilling to watch. They've got Reece James and Callum Hudson-Odoi on the right. And you just feel like their understanding, having been playing together for so long, allowed all sorts of brilliance on the right-hand side. I do think it's about getting certain players closer to goal, feeling confidence. Also, you have to look at the opponent. Like, I'm sorry, it is Burnley. So I don't know how much to take out of this at the moment.
They've had problems, though, against teams you wouldn't have thought would have given them any problems. They've lost home to West Ham and Southampton quite recently.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I think it's just a case of this is what happens with Chelsea at the moment. I don't want to read into it because in many ways it is youth, and I don't want to always expect consistency from them. But at the same time, when they have it and when they're allowed to play at their full force, and you can see the talent of the kids.
He's starting to mix up a bit, his team. So you put Ross Barkley into this game rather than Kovacic, which means you've got a player who can break lines with the ball rather than just
more direct.
Yeah. So it looks like a 4-2-3-1 on paper, but it's more of a 4-3-3, and Mount will drop left of Jorginho, who controls the play. And then you've got Barkley driving forward to break lines, and Mount will bring the ball in and make a pass. I think Hudson-Odoi is really special. Like, makes things happen all the time when he's on the pitch.
Can someone explain why England are producing so many good right backs all of a sudden?
I think there's just an academy that just sends right backs.
He's really, really good.
He is really good.
And Scotland are doing left backs.
And what happens?
Team GB.
Oh my God, Team GB.
Excitement building
for the
Olympics. Yeah. What about Manchester United, Ali? Like Chelsea, they had a straightforward home win, 4-0 against Norwich. 200 appearances for Marcus Rashford. Good achievement for him, but are we going to be lamenting in years to come that he's had too much too soon and he's going to be knackered in about 5 years? Or is he just going to be solid all the way through?
It's hard to say right now, but for the moment, really, really good, wasn't he, on Saturday? Just sort of drove United forward, was doing a bit of everything, dropping deep and looking for balls in behind, combined with Juan Mata quite well a few times. I wonder whether he can ever be a centre forward, say for England. He's much better being out on the left with the freedom to kind of roam. But I don't know. I don't know if he'll burn out. He is a bit over relied on, isn't he, such a young player?
Can I just say something? When it comes to Marcus Rashford, firstly, I think he's a phenomenal talent. A lot of people were talking about, should they have really let go of Lukaku? And I was like, Rashford's not doing the job at centre forward. All he needs is players around him, players who can help him. If it's Juan Mata, if it was Paul Pogba, if it's Anthony Martial, every time you put somebody in with him that can help him out, he always provides and does something really special. What I think with Rashford what you have to also look at is, while other players and young players have had the benefit of stability and excellent coaching, people who have been around to develop them, or at least really great coaches if you are a Chelsea that keeps changing its manager, he is someone who has developed on his own despite the madness that is at Manchester United. There isn't a role model for him to look up to. There isn't a Scholes or a Giggs or a Rio Ferdinand who he can really like talk to at the end of the day. There's just been managers that are more interested in trying to get them out of the hole than actually looking at the youth and being like, right, what do you need right now? While Sterling has benefited from Pep Guardiola, while Trent Alexander, Andy Robertson, whoever it is, has been looking at Klopp as sort of the man who's helping them reach their potential, Rashford's having to do this all on his own. And he's done a remarkable job considering tactics have changed all the time, players have changed, the club is free-falling so many times. And that is why I think for him, he is such an extraordinary talent.
Yeah, maybe he's like Brian Robson was pre the glory days of Manchester United, the one shining talent in quite difficult times. It'd be interesting to see how he progresses.
Is that the first time Marcus Rashford has ever been compared to Brian Robson?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. Other side of Manchester, Sergio Aguero is now the all-time leading non-British scorer in the Premier League with 177 goals, moving past Thierry Henry. Pep Guardiola says he will die scoring goals, which sounded like a threat to me. He's still incredibly important for City, JJ, despite the fact he's 31, and it did look for a time like he might be being superseded.
I think Guardiola is just trying to manage him. He gets injured quite a lot, and it takes him a bit of time to get back into the groove of things. But, I mean, back in here with a hat-trick, he's one of the best the Premier League's had. It just doesn't seem to be talked about it. Kind of weird. He doesn't look like... I think it's because he doesn't look like a number nine, because he's kind of small and stocky, and you think a number nine should look like Alan Shearer. That's what they look like. And but he's a weird sort of... He seems quite small, but yeah, he's always in amongst it, like always in the battle with players. I really, really like watching
him. Also, because you always heard stuff about him, sort of like, you know, a bit of a lazy trainer. Even they were discussing it on Match of the Day. You know,
doesn't learn English.
No, yeah, the stuff that, like, his diet would consisted of fizzy drinks and red meat and, like, you know, like, just kind of just looks like the guy that really can't be bothered but really talented at the same time, you know? Yeah. But you get a lot of those. Romario was remarkably, like, terrible like that as well. You know, just wants to go to Carnival, so it's like, I'll score the goals just so I can leave. Aguero is that kid, and I think with age, what you're getting as well is better experience, better understanding of how to utilize space and his powers at the right time in the right way.
Maybe everyone will really appreciate him once he's gone.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's always the case. Yeah. They always get a state funeral after they're dead, but yes, no one appreciates them when they're
alive.
When
they're
once he's died from scoring goals. What about Southampton? A 9-0 defeat versus Leicester earlier this season. And now a 2-1 away win at Leicester. Has there been a bigger turnaround for any team this year than Southampton? And I should say, JJ, at the time of that 9-0 defeat, you were saying you didn't think Southampton were that bad. And I think I was a little bit rude to you for suggesting that.
So, we all were. Yeah. We all hold and take responsibility.
I hold my hands up, JJ. It's I think fine. You might have been right about
Southampton. I just like being right. It's good. I think Ralph Hasenhüttl is a great manager. They got him at exactly the right age. As my theory of the managers who win things before 43 going to become good, and they're at their peak around about 51 years old. I think he's about 51 right now, 52 maybe.
I don't know if you can say great for a guy that lost 9-1. I'm not saying to you that
he's not bad. The manager does that, is it? Like, if the team just falls apart, then you can do sometimes. You just watch it fall apart. But he clearly knows how to set that team up. They play really well. He's got them really going. They're organised. He's making a team with all right players play better than they are. I think if he's at one of the top clubs, I think he'd be... I mean, if he's in charge of Chelsea, they'd definitely be pushing like higher than the artist now.
Oh, you think he'd do better than Lampard?
I think so. I think he'd do well, better than Solskjaer at United as well. I think he's really, really underrated.
Well, you've been right before about Southampton this year, JJ. Let's have some lovely music. Yes, it's time for A Song for Europe with your friend and mine, Mina Arzouks, or Razouks, Rizuki. We've got to start with Zlatan, haven't we, Mina? A goal on his second debut for AC Milan.
Yep, that's it. It's the return of Zlatan. Poor Milan. I just feel like it's been such a rough time for them recently. And they are a side that actually produce a lot of chances. Their problems have been in the fact that they don't know how to take it. And now that they've got Zlatan, who's... offers a little bit of a leadership. It's a wise head in a very young squad. And he's obviously making the difference. And everyone was just like, oh, is he going to get tired because he can't play a full 90 minutes? He hasn't played in a month. But you know what? He stayed on for the whole time, scored the goal, felt really like energized. And you could see there's a somewhat change in him because he's not getting angry with his teammates when they don't deliver. He's encouraging them. And I wonder whether that's just, you know.
Yeah, comes with age, doesn't it?
Yeah, it comes with age when you're just like, oh, let's try to help these kids now.
Scored in four different decades now, which is a stat I love.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And now he's going to honestly try to outscore Lukaku. He's going to try to outscore Ronaldo. He's going to try to enter in this weird competition and win everything in his head.
Yeah, goal for Ronaldo in Juve's 2-1 win over Roma. They're 2 points clear at the top. But what about Lazio? 10 wins in a row for them. Are they going to sneak into the title race and how are they doing it?
They are in the title race. A lot of it is based on luck, I've got to say. You know, like, I mean, this was a Napoli. You know, Napoli have obviously been really suffering recently and they always do manage some good performances at times and then end up losing for some reason because they can't really score the goals that they need to. But with this, it was Immobile getting it at the, you know, because of a Ospina problem and mistake at the back. And they just nicked it again. And you're just thinking, wow, like Lazio are on this like amazing run at the moment. They're feeling so confident. Even if they get a half chance, they'll try everything they can because they're feeling that confidence at the moment. They have to be spoken about. They are 6 points behind Juve, but they've got a game in hand at the moment. And so then they'll effectively only be three under them and one between them and Inter. But there's also sort of it's interesting to see because I feel like Roma could also be spoken about. I know that they didn't win against Juventus and they lost Nicolo Zaniolo to an ACL injury. Juventus, can I just say something? Have just also potentially lost Demiral for a while, and this is the centre back that Leicester have been looking at, that several teams have been looking at. He is quite genuinely one of the best centre backs I've ever seen play at this age, like the way that he's playing.
How old is he now?
He's 21, just 1 year older than Matthias De Ligt, and De Ligt is on the bench for Demiral at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just this kid that's like, you know, he arrived for, what, 18 million from Sassuolo. They bought him from a Turkish team. He was at Sporting before, so he knows how to speak several languages. He's like Ronaldo's best friend. He's Dybala's best friend. And he's just this amazing talent at the back. And if Juve have seriously lost him to an injury, which Sarri says it's a serious injury, but we will know more today, then it's a huge loss for them as well, in my opinion. Hopefully, Chiellini can come back from ACL, but otherwise, they have to go back to De Ligt and Bonucci, and it doesn't work as well.
Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia. Ernesto Valverde said that they were only there because of the money. Is it good to see people speaking out about this sort of thing, and how was that received?
It's been spoken a lot about in Spain about the fact that it is just simply there for they're all there for the money. It's 120 million to play the Supercopa. For 3 years in Saudi Arabia. It's something that Italy has already done. And they feel like they have to do these types of things now, potentially selling a game to, you know, to be played in the States or whatever it is to try to generate the kind of income that is or that is so readily available in the Premier League, whereas Spanish and Italian clubs have to look for different ways to try to make money, basically. And this is one of it. The Supercopa is traditionally between the team that has won the league and the team that's against the team that's won the Copa. But they've now turned it into this mini competition with four teams.
They only did that because Real Madrid had to be there because of part of the contract.
Exactly, because it is about it's selling it to Saudi Arabia and as a product.
It's madness. So Real Madrid are now Super Cup champions, having come third in the league and not even making the final of the Copa del Rey last season. Amazing.
It's all about the money.
Can we just talk about Fede Valverde's tackle as well last night?
You watched that.
I watched it and it was a really, really atrocious game. It was 0-0. It was just rubbish. Nothing really happened. It was just too hot. It went to extra time, which no one wants. And obviously extra time is always boring. And then Alvaro Morata gets put clean through on goal and Fede Valverde cannot catch him and just completely swipes him out. It was absolutely amazing. Red card. And then he had the cheek. So it was very similar to the Solskjaer one.
On Rob Lee.
And Solskjaer got up and was just like, yeah, no, that's a red card. Fede Valverde decided to square up to everyone that would come near him. He was just like, what do you think I'm going to do? And then as he walked off, Diego, opposition manager Diego Simeone, gave him a pat on the back of the head and kind of like, yeah, I like
this is
that.
How well I like
done.
You.
Well done.
Also, because it's interesting, because actually, did you see João Felix and how Barcelona sort of ganged up on him?
Yeah.
So maybe it's a case of like, this is happening a lot with the kids, but Valverde did come out afterwards and then just said, you know, I'm sorry I had to do it, but otherwise, you know, Morata was going to score. So yeah. It's something I had to do.
Good for him for enlivening a dull game. Let's finish up by talking about the Stevenage manager, Graham Westley. Of course, as is traditional, the Graham Westley slot at the end of the show, who abandoned his car and ran the 5 miles to make it to their game against Port Vale. I'm going to ask you all, what is the biggest hurdle you've overcome to make a football match, JJ?
I got given the wrong postcode to play five-a-side down the road from here. And so I had to run from Southwark to a bit in Elephant and Castle I couldn't find. That's quite far.
That's not that far.
It is when you're running all around it.
I think how
it
did you perform in the game?
I got there halfway through and did all right. It was just 5 a side.
Depends
where
in Southwark.
Far. It's just not as far as 5 miles, yeah. Which is absolutely
five
ridiculous.
Miles.
I reckon I ran about a mile and a half probably, maybe a bit more to get there.
How about you, Ellie?
I once was going to a Saturday game and we just kind of followed someone who said they knew where we were going. And after a while, having got off a train out into the countryside, basically, we were just walking and walking and walking. After a while, we kind of went, are we nearly there? And we checked and we'd got off 2 stops too early. And then he directed us... So we decided to go the most direct route via Google Maps, and we ended up walking across fields, private land, climbing like fence, barbed wire fences, and running across. And then it turned up 5 minutes before the game, and our captain was just standing there. We sort of climbed through a bush out of the wrong side of the football pitch to where the like pavilion was, and just ran across sort of. Head down in a shame.
Amazing. Diego Simeone would love that as a pre-match preparation. How about you, Mina? I don't think you've climbed through any bushes to get to a football match. I'm going to say that now.
It.
That is very off-brand for Mina Rizuki.
No, I don't think I would ever go through any of this to get to a game. I just go home. But I can tell you a funny story that when I went to the Cardiff final, we tapped in the address of the, you know, like the home address to go back by GPS. And about 2 hours into our journey back to London, we were like, why are there so many fields? Yeah, and I was like, okay, we kind of should be in town now, you know? And we realised we had reached, like, Plymouth.
Oh, dear.
Or we're on our way there, at least. And
yeah, that was the wrong way.
Yeah, so basically what we had done is just extended the journey by another 2.5 hours. And so it took us about a full 5 to get back home after that.
Awful business.
You must have won, Tom, though.
Well... I was thinking about this, and I did a ridiculous trip around France for Euro 2016.
You did, yeah.
Sponsored by a brilliant car company.
that you couldn't drive.
All right, come on. There's no need to reveal that. But
QPR fans.
In retrospect, driving to Paris, from Paris to Marseille in a day is not a great idea. And then when you get to Marseille, arriving more or less in the middle of where it was all kicking off between England and Russia fans... It was a frightening moment, but we bravely checked into our hotel amongst some people who had head wounds, and then watched the game at the fan zone. So, you know, got there in the end, a little bit tired, but, you know.
You made the effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheers, Kia. That's your lot for this week. You can contact me on Twitter if you'd like to before next week's episode. My name is @Tom_Gibbs on Twitter. In real life, it's much the same, except there's a space between the two words, and there's no at symbol at the beginning of it. I'm glad we've cleared that up. Don't forget to send us an email if you'd like to. It's @afcpodcast@telegraph.co.uk. There's no at the beginning of that either. You can work it out as an email address. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Audio Football Club are the words you need to type into a search bar. Find us from there. Backing you. Thanks to Joel Grove on the buttons. Thanks to you for your company. I'll talk to you again soon.